The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is head priest at the monastery and the abbess of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is the dedication after the Emejuku Kanangyo. Kanan Bodhisattva perceives the cries of the world, and so compassion is shown in all its many forms. They liberate all sentient beings, all suffering sentient beings, and bring them to great joy. They realize mind. All beings are one essence. Master Dogen said, great wisdom lives in the body. Body and mind are not separate. This being so, they are called body, heart, mind. Great wisdom lives in the body. What I've been thinking about is meeting royal ease. Meeting our royalty. Royal ease has my back, your front, along with Prajnaparamita, the emptiness, and Shakyamuni Buddha. Teachers in the tradition emphasize that we all possess this innate Buddha nature, existing right here now, all beings, all things, no one left out. All beings are this one essence, this one true royalty. What is royalty? Nobility. I remember when I first came here, Ralph Steele, a Vipassana teacher, was teaching the Satipatthana Sutra. I had no idea what that was. The mindfulness of the four foundations of mindfulness, mindfulness of body, mindfulness of mind, mindfulness of dharmas, mindfulness of feeling. And he first did beginning instruction in Zazen. And the first thing he said was, take a noble posture because you're a noble being. And that stayed with me to this day. And so I've been looking at, like, through the years of many years of sitting, how posture helps the mind, how mind helps our posture, and how we can meet these cries with our posture fully, helping our mind that can't wrap around all these cries, like how royal ease sits. We all have this potential to awaken, experience wisdom and compassion, our unconditional nature, our royal being. Buddha speaks of so many things nobly, have noble friends. He gives us a noble path. He gives us noble truths. I think we have to reclaim this royalty. It's got a bad rap, you know? Like, we can be kings in our kingdom and queens in our queendom and queers in our queerdom, fully. Nobody should take that away. Nobody should be able to take our happiness, ever. That's up to us. Brings them to great joy. They realize mind. So discovering this inner royalty and how our posture supports. There's a quote by Milarepa. I seem to be going to Milarepa. Marpa, his teacher. First of all, posture means, when you hear asana in yoga, asana is posture, okay? And Marpa was the teacher of Milarepa, a farmer, a yogi, lived in the 11th century in Tibet. And he said, which I found very interesting. If you take all the teachings of Buddhism and put them on one half a scale, all the teachings of Buddhism, and you put them on one half a scale, and you put the body posture for meditation on the other half, the scale would tip towards the body posture. What's he saying? The body posture in meditation is more important than all the other teachings of the Dharma. I found that very interesting to contemplate. Posture alone can bring everything else into balance. Why? Because where do we go out of balance? Right? The samsara is that spin. And when that's not centered, that goes off balance. You can't throw a pot unless you're centered. It just, you can't. You have to be centered or just, you're going to get a wobble. It won't go up. You won't be able to open it to some degree. You get a nice big pile of scraps, that's for sure. So Milarepa, Marpa's disciple, put it this way. When the posture is aligned, the energies align. When the energies align, the mind aligns. Sometimes the mind's aligned and the body's having its experience, so it'll help. It's not separate. Body, heart, mind work together. And it allows us then to face what we need to face. If we can remember our posture and facing, we can face. Body aligned, balance, breath unimpeded. We work with that in the here. We're in a receptive mode. And this true posture can happen standing or walking, seated or lying down, as the Buddha said. I found this interesting too, about this waking down expression that Lama Willa Baker uses in her book on wakeful body. And she says, waking down doesn't mean shifting attention to the area below your neck. It means exploring the wisdom of your body, embodied experience, from the physical to the sensory, from the sensory to the emotional, from the emotional to the energetic, from the energetic to the conscious. It's about exploring the sacred world of feeling, breath, and sensation that's already present. So if you can imagine facing, and with people too, when we're facing, there's a lot more going on. If we can kind of include more of us in our posture so things aren't impeded. She says she thinks of waking down for another reason. We spend too many years meditating and gathering profound insights. We can be inspired by noble ideas and aspirations. But these insights, ideas, and aspirations may be powerful, but they can also remain locked in a conceptual box. A lot of us talk about that, right? We have, our mind is inspired and it moves so fast and gets so excited about words and ideas. And she's saying it could just get locked right there, that it has to wake down into embodiment. If the truths we know with the conceptual mind or that we glimpse with intuition do not make it down into the body and nervous system, we'll not really live them. So Gokhan spoke about the importance of the intellect and understanding concepts. That helps with all of this. They're not separate. Right? But it can't stay locked there. And so we practice bringing that embodying that, bringing it alive, and we sure get a lot of practice. That's why we have each other, because we have to relate differently. You know, somebody's weeping in front of you, you don't want to start lecturing about Buddhism. Give me a hug. Can I give you a hug? Come here. Come here, body. Come here, body. The path of waking down, she says, does not transcend. It metabolizes. It metabolizes. It alchemizes. It alchemizes the heart. You don't need to leave anything behind. In fact, you can't leave anything behind. We need all of our humanness. It's a part of us. But rather, on the path of waking down, what you are experiencing right here and now is enough. That's the hard part. Because when it goes up, and when we get visited by Mara, that's saying, what are you doing? You can't do this, and all of that. We have to find some other resource that this is enough, that here and now, and whatever is happening is our liberation. It's called practice. That's it. It's right there. We are getting the resources for that. And another part was, and I remember hearing in beginning instruction, you probably heard it too. If you haven't, you're going to hear it now. At least it was in my beginning instruction, which Shugen, the senior monk, gave me at that time. At the end, he said, don't believe a word I say. He gave me the whole instruction. He said, don't believe a word I said. Make it real. You have to test it within your own body, heart, and mind. Just what the Buddha said. And the Buddha wouldn't have said it if he didn't do it as well. That's the royalty. It's verifying it for ourselves. You know, because we hear, wake up, and we're sent vertically. So maybe we can expand that a little, what wake up means. Because from a very young age, of course, we're always taught to mostly to go to our thinking mind. Or we went there to survive a situation. And we may come to practice having ideas about leaving suffering behind and shooting off somewhere, like we're going to leave that behind and, like, you know, blast off into enlightenment. But it's that very stuff that we light up. That's enlightenment, that we practice that. That's the enlightenment. Dada used to say, you can't just take your seat and say, do me. He says, we have to engage the whole being. We can't try to wake up. It's already here. We just have to come to it. Yeah. Leave something behind. Surrender a bit. And part of the practice of Zazen is coming into alignment. So you may feel, if you're just starting out or going all along, there's going to be a lot of body stuff in the beginning, in this alignment of all of this together into this piece of architecture to turn in. So there's a lot of alignment that has to take place because we've developed habits not only in our mind, but also in our body. I remember this dancer. I don't know, I was trying to get her to come here. She never did. I can't remember her name, but every dance had this in it. Everyone. And she was just getting, like, so sick of it. But she, like, every time she'd choreograph, this would come up. And she was like, what is this? She had no language for it. It was just there. So she did some work, and she realized when she was young, her house was always a mess. And her mom, like, wasn't, you know, able to do such good housekeeping, and there were always dishes outside the sink. And she would take her arm and just go, and keep putting the dishes into the sink. It unlocked it. That was it. She was just repeating this pattern. And once she got it, then she could use it. But it wasn't ruling her. It wasn't just happening, right? So sometimes we do things over and over, and we can see it comes from somewhere. The body has a natural wakefulness, a somatic mindfulness, if you will. It's interesting. I was also looking at reading the paper before session, and Jacinda, I was thinking of Shugan in New Zealand, and Jacinda Ardern, the former Prime Minister of New Zealand, she resigned as Prime Minister in 2023, but she has a new book out. It's called A Different Kind of Power. And listen to this. She says, and she makes the case in the book that leading with empathy and kindness might be the solution for a range of global crises. Really? Like, we're still there? Like, leading with empathy and kindness might be the solution for a range of global crisis. Great. I had to read it several times. And she led a country through multiple serious crisis. And so she can talk about this and how she led. She had to resign because of leading with empathy and kindness. It didn't go over so well. Yeah. And she writes about what it's like to govern as a woman. Not a first in her country, but still a rarity on the global stage. And as a mother, she was the second world leader to have a baby while in office, and had the baby in the room while she was in meetings. Yeah. So leading with empathy and kindness is a choice any of us can make. So, Kanan Bodhisattva, royal ease. First time I saw Kanan Bodhisattva sitting in royal ease was when I was in grad school in Kansas, Wichita, Kansas. But we drove to Kansas City, which is in Missouri, to the Nelson Atkin Art Museum, where they have a very big Buddhist collection. Now, I'd already met Otagaki Rengetsu and her pottery. She had already influenced my path of pottery, and I was influenced by Zen arts at that time. So I really wanted to go to the Buddhist section. And so when I walked into this Buddhist section, it was that dimly lit room. And there, just as you walk in, is this Kuan Yin, this Kanan Bodhisattva, which is carved out of a single piece of wood, our size, a little bit larger, sitting in royal ease, right when you walk in. Okay? This vulnerable position, just boom, you walk right into it. I didn't know what a bodhisattva was or Kuan Yin or anything, but I started shaking. I started shaking because I didn't know where to put my eyes, actually. I saw this figure with their privates, vulnerable, most vulnerable parts, wide open. Wide open. And I was shaking. And I didn't even know what a bow was, but I bowed and left. I bowed and left. And that was it. We may know her by the name, Chinese name Kuan Yin, the Japanese name Kanan, in Korean Kwan Um, Tara Chinrezig, Avalokiteshvara, seen in various forms, sometimes with lots of hands and eyes, and originally in China began as a male form, then into a female form, and now it's a non-binary form. They realize mine, all beings are one essence. And then I came to here, and oh my God, oh my God, there she is again. There she is, with a whole host of others at every turn here. Buddhas, Manjushri, Samantabhadra, Fudo Myo, Ava with 10,000 arms in the kitchen. And then we're encouraged to bow as we pass. Why is that? Why do we bow when we pass an image, a statue? We say in Zen that these, you can call them archetypes, are also how we identify with ourselves. It's not external. They're an identity of who we are. So each time you bow, you can say, I am this. I am this. I am this. These beings are timeless. It can be an animal. There's a picture of Rudy in the garden. How many of us go up to Rudy and go, Bodhisattva, Rudy Bodhisattva? Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, wakeful beings living to serve others. And they don't want to be stuck in time. They want to be part of our lives. But they need an invitation. So maybe this can be an invitation to come into my life. Come into my life. So every time we pass, we're invited to take that turn and to bow and to identify and to remember who we are. It's a wordless transmission. Nobody has to say anything. We just identify with that. So, in my room, I needed a little goose. Stuff was heating up with all the things that were happening, and I was starting to feel like the cries were getting a little heavy. And so I rearranged my space so that I would see a bodhisattva, an image at every turn, something, a rock, whatever it was, and just cleared the space. So when I get up, I have these little candles. I just light them all up. Light her up. This, I am this. This is how I enter this day. And I have Joan at the temple too, who has like a very powerful feng shui. And so she can feel too, like these spaces in the temple. She has one in her room that I pass on the way downstairs. So we both get hits from each other's rooms. And it's starting to fill in. So you can go from top to bottom. And at every turn, you'll be reminded, this is you. This is who I am. And when we came here, Daido gave an assignment, some of you might remember, to take up Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva and work with this image. And he said to learn about it, learn what the details are, pick one of the postures, and learn about each part of it, what they're holding, why they're seated like that, and then keep putting yourself into that posture. So I started for 90 days this practice of sitting in royal ease. Yeah. Now, Avalokiteshvara means ava is to, means down. Lok means to look, look. And avalok means looking down, to look down. So it's a noun. To look down, it becomes the one who looks down. Ashvara means hears the sound. So it says Chinese scholars translated it as the one who looks down upon and hears the sounds or the cries of the world. That's her. She looks down and she hears the suffering in the world. So they embody the energy of observing, of looking down, of noticing, of being present to the cries, to the lamentations of the world. And they're immersed in Prajna Paramita. Pra means before, and jna, knowing, before we know. The knowledge, the wisdom we're born with. The wisdom of emptiness. Deep awareness that comes from knowing something in the deepest level of wisdom. That's what they're coursing in. The wisdom of anything being fixed in its true nature. And the body knows this. The body knows this. Incredibly spaciousness, immensity that Shoen talked about, that we sense when we let go of what we think we know, when we let down our barriers of conception and ideas and simply experience the moment. So they're doing deep prajna paramita, doing the practice of deep wisdom, the coursing in the wisdom of oneness, non-duality, completeness, the unity of all things, whatever names you want to give it, this profound state before knowing, hearing the sounds and cries of the world, the agony, the wanting, the not wanting, and in that moment, observing the world, sees the emptiness of all the conditions, and she says, and what that must be like for most of us, we don't really know, but we can feel it. She says, yes, there is suffering, but there's no intrinsic being to it. And if we can see that just for a moment, we begin to see that we can loosen our desperate hold on who we think we are, what we think our situation is, and who we think the other is. And we allow ourselves to be more interrelated, more active in a true sense, truly active. We begin to experience interconnection, to allow that dance of harmonies of being in a very different way than when we were dragged around by our ego. From one victory to disappointment, to victory to disappointment after another. And we become more compassionate and more alive. That's what she says. Possibility, potential. Joanna Macy passed, as we know, some of us may know, last week. And I remember reading in her book, World is Lover, World is Self, she heard this person speak about climate and giving real, he was a climate scientist, and giving statistics about things and the rate they were going, and extinction and just oxygen and levels of carbon in the air, and, you know, quite difficult material. But she said he just also had this buoyancy and joy about it, not joyfully saying it. I mean, he was giving the facts, but also there was something in his being that was very connected, compassionate, alive. She just didn't know how to say it. And so she went to him afterwards, and she said, I heard what you said. That's devastating. We're in crisis. But how come you're so open and receptive? And he says, because I hold possibility. I hold the potential for each one of us to contact that royalty, that if we created it, we can uncreate it. He holds that potential. He holds that. I also found out in Hindu that royalese posture is Lalita Sana or Raja Lila Sana. Says the posture literally means the one who plays. This one, Lalita Sana's, the one who plays. Royal ease, the one who plays. Raja Lila means royal play. I was like, what? Royal play. And that creation is seen as a divine play. Our play. How will we play? So this posture of royal ease is very simple, and you're welcome to try it. I'll demonstrate, and you can also, if you feel like moving into it on your chair or on the floor, you can. So you can feel it. So the right leg is drawn up, and it's actually open. And the left leg pulls in. And then this hand is just like you're on a park bench. And this hand rests. Just feel, now we're not, this is great. I get the best view, but look, look around. This is how we can hear the cries of the world. Just like this. So practice it. Like get feel this, like what it's doing. Right now you're here. But when you're alone and you sit like this and you relax and you hear those cries, you can hold it. And you can remember about coursing in Prajna Paramita. Now, doesn't this communicate better than any text? You can go back. But I'm telling you, pick any bodhisattva, learn about them, and embody. That's what the deep practice is. So we may not be coursing in seeing the emptiness of all the five conditions. We're in process. We're working it. Every thought that you see arise and let go of, there's a gap that it keeps expanding. Okay, that absolute nature that it may have gone by fast, but it's there. That can keep growing and growing and growing. And what we can practice is acceptance. Complete, fundamental acceptance of ourselves, of our experience, of our situation, of our world. I think that's where that climate scientist lived. He accepted. And there's more. How do we want to actually live that together? Don't let anyone take your happiness. If it's going down, Eddie Hilesium, who was gone to the concentration camp, threw a note out the window, and it said, "We're singing on the way to the camps." She would not let her dignity, her easefulness, the beauty she saw, the horror she saw, take her life, take her royalty, take her nobility. And she could see that in everyone. Can we see that in everyone, even the person we think, there's no royalty there? That's not how they came out. That's not how any of us came out. We've all done stuff. An unexamined mind is a dangerous one. That's what's going on. We talk about understanding karma. That's why it's Buddhist stress. Understand causes and conditions. All the teachers are emphasizing, understand cause and effect. Keep seeing how this being, that becomes, that being, this becomes. Empty in nature, what is it? How does that happen? Not fixed, changing, moving, potential, possibility. How do we accept the unacceptable? How can we? Why should we? Why should we be at ease in a world that seems to be taking steps towards self-destruction? That's reclaiming royalty within that. We're not fooled. We don't not see horrors and things. No. You kidding me? We're engaged in the world. Ease is not indifference. Acceptance is not complacency. Instead, it's a complete willingness to take the backward step and to bring the heart and mind, body to zero. Again and again, zoom out from being caught in the world, in the dualities of right and wrong, true and false, acceptable and unacceptable. Make a fortified royal container in stillness and into the movement of your life. And together, as we're doing here, we can enter the divine play. And that awakening is dignified, relaxed, easeful, and expressed through the body. Great wisdom lives in the body. Body and mind are not separate. This being so, they are called body, heart, mind. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.